even road-blocked on a dusty plain, beside the shore of the Bitter Sea, in a remote and savage land, the great king remained the hub around which the spokes of his world empire turned. Unable to direct the invasion of Greece from Persepolis, Xerxes had simply ordered Persepolis to be brought with him to Greece. Night after night, no matter where the great king halted, servants would scurry to unload mountains of luggage from trains of mules and camels, to level out a huge expanse of ground, and then to raise on it a tent so splendid as to put most palaces in the shade. Since Persian royalty was inveterately restless, migrating from capital to capital depending on the season, the great king's engineers, with their long experience of providing for royal road trips, knew precisely how best to prefabricate luxury. As a result, even in the bleak surroundings of the approach to Thermopylae, the imperial dignity, cocooned in rugs and cushions, leather awnings and coloured hangings, was never under any threat. Chamber after chamber led away from the royal presence, while the immortals, stationed by every doorway, stood as surety against any assassination attempt. The contrast with conditions inside the hot gates could hardly have been more brutal. While Leonidas was obliged to camp out amid stench and putrescence, the great king could direct the battle from within the perfumed cool of his audience hall. Or, at night, looking to conserve his energy, retire to a silver-footed couch, where the coverings would have been prepared for him by a specialist bedmaker, a slave trained to make linens beautiful and soft, for the Persians were the very first people to have regarded this as an art. The royal tent may have been monumental, but it had to be if it were to provide an adequate nerve centre for a global superpower. And no less than the Spartans, the great king's followers were steeled by a rigorous discipline. Protocol, even on campaign, was rigid and sacrosanct. No matter how violently the gales outside the tent might rage, or how alarming the news from the front, the great king, seated in due magnificence upon a throne of solid gold, conducted his councils of war precisely as though presiding at Persepolis. Only in the degree to which the royal ear might bend itself to foreigners did the very different circumstances of Thermopylae intrude upon proceedings. Overwhelming force and a mastery of data, the twin characteristics, as they had ever been, of the Persian way of making war. To synthesize these adequately in the tent of the King of Kings, princes of the royal blood, intelligence agents, logistics chiefs, and Greek renegades all might equally be summoned and have their reports and judgments pooled. And Xerxes, though enraged by the defense of the hot gates, kept his patience. The king of a mountain people, it hardly came as any great revelation to him that a narrow pass might be rendered impregnable to a frontal attack. Yet even when a natural gateway exactly imitates the defences raised by human ingenuity, it will invariably, as the Persian military well knew, betray a fatal weakness, for there are few gorges that cannot somehow be bypassed by a path across their heights. The Syrian gates, and the Cilician gates, and the Persian gates, all were vulnerable to being outflanked by mountain roads. Why not the hot gates, too?